Welcome to the Unscripted Wrestling Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Hummer, here with my co-hosts, Doug, Eric, and our buddy Stevie. How's everyone doing tonight?
Pretty good.
Good.
I swear, it was just like, just watching you just now was like watching me try to move the my rearview mirror in my car. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, fucking mic. But tonight we'll be doing the Rhodes Family Retrospect. So we will be talking about all three members of the Rhodes family. Obviously, there's a lot to unpack here. So we'll get into it quick after the plugs. Also, for next week, we might as well introduce this right away. Eric, why don't you tell the listeners what we're doing next week?
Next week, we're going to do top 10 Shawn Michaels favorite moments, or top 10 moments of Shawn Michaels' career.
Yes, sir.
That will be a fun and interesting episode.
Yeah, that'll be a good one.
Top 10.
That'll be a good one. Doug will be arriving a little late on that one. Doug, why don't you get into the plugs real quick before we get started?
You got it, boss. Make sure to listen to Anthony Boxman and Smart, the Dirt Sheet Dudes, every Wednesday and Friday night. Mixler.com/Dirt Sheet Dudes, 10 o'clock Eastern Time. They can be found on all podcast platforms, Stitcher, Apple, iHeartRadio, all major podcast platforms. Also, they have a show every other Saturday called The Hollywood Hangout. So listen for that, Mixler.com/Dirt Sheet Dudes. Obviously, you listen to us every Friday night here for the Unscripted Wrestling Podcast, part of the Everything Unscripted Podcast Network. Next week, like they said, they're going to, like Daniel and Eric said, top 10 Shawn Michaels moments. Listen to us on Sunday, and that's usually at 8 o'clock Eastern Time on Fridays. Sundays, 5 o'clock Eastern Time, the top tier podcast. Daniel, what is the subject this week?
We'll be doing snacks.
So, it's not just snack cakes, it's regular snacks. Well, it's whatever the tier list is that you found on the internet, right?
No, I just wanted to do snacks. So it'll be, chips, cakes, Twinkies, all that. I just thought it'd be better.
Are cookies on that list, too?
Yeah.
All right.
So I thought
it'd be
better.
Different kind of cookies.
Awesome. Yeah. So
different brands and all that. So it's going to be
all snacks.
All snacks. So basically anything you don't eat for dinner unless you're a college student and or lazy.
Or you.
Yeah. Fuck off. All right.
Because Doug,
and
we might
also
have to get somebody, turn somebody on.
I know. I already talked to her.
Okay.
She'll let me know. I have to talk to her agent. Anyway, also, we are in the middle of round one of the Unscripted Jeopardy tournament. We are 7 matches in this bitch. Already so far advancing, our buddy Mark McGee, who we've had on this podcast a few times, my buddy Tim has advanced to round two, Aunt Sharon has advanced to round two, my buddy Connor has advanced to round two, my buddy Rick has advanced to round two, Eric's friend Stephanie has advanced to round two, and Eric's buddy Rye has advanced to round two. We have 2 more first-round matches tomorrow night. The boss here, Dahama, will be participating in a matchup on Sunday.
Yep.
And this goes to anybody that placed second in their matches, they will be getting a second chance. Well, besides you and Stevie, obviously you placed third in your match, so this does not apply to you, unfortunately. But anybody that placed second in their first round matches will be getting a second chance. Because I feel like being fair, and I fucked up Final Jeopardy enough times to where, people do deserve a second chance. Plus one person didn't advance because I got bullied. But yeah, so look forward to that coming up tomorrow night. We will have, like I said, 2 matches, 8 o'clock Eastern time. One match will be at 8, one match will be at 9. Daniels, I think, is going to be at 7 on Sunday.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so. All right, that's your cue.
All right, so let's get into it then. The Rhodes
family.
Thank
you, Doug.
Yeah, thanks, Doug.
No problem.
I guess.
Yeah,
do that all the time.
I was just gonna say that's the only reason why I'm still part of the show.
Yeah.
The hell are you thanking me for?
But the Rhodes family, Dusty, Dustin, and Cody, three definitely memorable people. Steve, I'm gonna start with you here before we get into the meat and potatoes. If you had to sit in a room and you could only watch one of these guys' matches, who are you picking?
Dusty Rhodes.
You're going Dusty?
I'm going with Dusty. Because I think he had one of the greatest matches in the NWA.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a hell of a library.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, all these guys do, but...
Yeah. The thing is that Dusty is not the greatest wrestler of the three of them, but Dusty could also cut a promo.
But maybe he still probably had the best matches, though, to Stevie's point. I'd actually agree with him because him and Flair always tore the house down. Him and Race always tore the house down.
Yeah, him and Terry Funk. The matches he's had with Tully.
See, if he had a good enough guy in there to carry the wrestling part of it, and he just brings the charisma and the intensity, it's a fabulous match every time.
Yeah.
And that's what Dusty is.
Right, exactly. And the thing is, too, is that he's not my favorite of the Rhodes family. My favorite is actually Goldust, or Dustin, because I thought Dustin was just such a captivating character.
As Goldust or just all around?
As Goldust. I mean, I like what he's doing now, kind of, or to a point.
Yeah,
because he's like half and half. So, it's just like, but Dusty obviously, Dusty kind of led the charge.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
We wouldn't have the two other guys without Dusty.
Well, yeah, definitely.
But, and I feel like we have to start with Dusty. So give a little bit of Dusty's background first, Dougie, and then we'll get into some war stories and stuff and our favorite moments, because I think that's the best way to do this instead of trying to – because if we give each guy's biographies, we're going to need about 6 more hours.
Okay, so basically Dusty was born the grandson – or the son of a plumber. And Dusty actually, when he was younger, had issues – Dusty couldn't walk. You know, he was born – I think he had some kind of – I don't know if it was polio or it was something. But, you know, he was on crutches or whatever when he was a kid. You know, he was a chubby kid. Basically, Dusty looked the same as he was when he was older as he did when he was younger. Except for, you know, when Dusty was younger, he actually looked like Pugsley Adams.
Yeah.
And that's not a knock on Dusty because, you know, I happen to – Pugsley was actually my favorite member of the Adams family. But so he didn't grow up – he didn't grow up rich. He grew up as, you know, he grew up middle class, American dream. You know, he gets into wrestling, obviously. He realized he could make money off it. And, or not necessarily make money, but he could, or he realized he had a gift for the gab, which he did, obviously. And, you know, he started in the 60s. He started as a heel as part of the Texas Outlaws tag team with Dick Murdoch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're both Texas boys. Dusty also played football at West Texas State, as did a lot of wrestlers. That's the funny thing. There's always like considered like two different like groups of people. There's the group of guys that went to high school together, Robbinsdale High School, in Robbinsdale, Minnesota. And then there's the group of guys that played football, maybe not all at the same time, but they all played football at West Texas State.
Yeah.
And Dusty was one of those guys that played at West Texas State. I think that's how him and – well, I don't know if Murdoch played there or not, but him and Murdoch, they became friends. They worked in the AWA together.
Well, yeah, and I think that's where we got to start, right? How influential was the tag team of Dick Murdoch and Dusty Rhodes, and how much did it help Dusty come into his own? Because they're doing heel work, by the way.
They're doing heel work, and Dusty was skinny at that time.
Yeah.
But they knew how to get heat, and that's how Dusty learned how to talk. Because by the time, and I kind of misspoke earlier, Murdoch had already been in the business a few years.
Yeah.
Murdoch was basically, they actually became partners in Florida.
Yeah.
Eddie Graham put them together.
Wow.
So Eddie Graham, because Eddie Graham trusted Murdoch. And said, all right, well, I see something in this guy. Mentor him, teach him, do whatever you got to do. And Murdoch was a good teacher because Murdoch knew how to get heat.
Yeah.
Because Murdoch embodied the South. They called him Captain Redneck for a reason.
Yeah.
Now, you know, there's rumors of stuff that he did in his – or not even necessarily rumors. He's actually admitted to it, but I'm not going to get into it because, one, this isn't Dick Murdoch's show. And, two, you know, we don't need to – open up that can of worms. But Dick Murdoch, you know, did some controversial things. But Dusty and Murdoch embodied the South.
Yeah.
They were Southern to the bone.
Yeah. And it's funny because when you think of Dusty Rhodes, you don't think of heel. But if you go back and watch some of that old stuff, he was good in the role.
He was good in the role. I know they tried to make him a heel again when he joined the NWO back in like 98. But that was just like, I think that was just a way to just get him off of commentary because you realized he was horrible.
And part of this thing, and I'm sure you guys are cool, we're going to be jumping around a lot here because that's just the nature of this episode. We're talking about three different careers.
Yeah.
Now, when you talk when I think of the Rhodes family, I think of the ultimate baby faces because I think Cody's probably the best baby face in AEW. He's booked himself that way. He's one of the top baby faces in AEW. He's very good at getting people behind him. He always, when fans were there, he always had the biggest pops. People love Cody Rhodes. People love Dusty Rhodes. He was the face of the NWA opposite of Ric Flair. When you talk about the best heel of the family, you got to say it's Dustin for his work as Gold Dust because he was a heel for most of that time.
I don't necessarily buy Cody as a babyface. I mean, I get it. Like, he kind of booked himself into that way. But also, too, Cody is also a hell of a heel, especially when Brandy's accompanying him to ringside. Or when she used to.
Yeah.
And the constant interference in the matches and all that stuff.
He is a hell of a heel, but the rest of the world would disagree with that, not buying him as a baby.
Well,
because they have.
Because the rest of the world, and again, this is where I want to start to sound controversial, but the rest of the world sucks them off. Because they're the majority of the rest of the world are AEW fans, and they buy into what he's selling.
Okay, and I knew you were going to give Cody the shit out of the group, but he is the only one here that he – well, no, he's not the only one because Dusty has booked and promoted. But
I mean, he's a better booker and promoter than his father was because his father did finishes too much.
Yes, and he put himself – yeah, the Dusty finish.
Yeah.
He – when you talk about being a great babyface, he booked himself to be a great babyface. If you put yourself in an angle with MJF where MJF fucks you over, and then you get into this big deal, people are going to cheer for you because they hate MJF.
Right, but the you were doing the same thing, by the way.
I was talking, though.
Yeah. All right. So the thing about that is I will give Cody credit to where he didn't put himself over, even though he should have gone over, some would say, in the thing with MJF, but they're trying to build MJF as a monster heel. I will give Cody credit that he loses the majority of the time when he has to.
Yeah.
Well, I'm still going to say he fucked over Sean Spears. Sean Spears should have won. And I do think, and again, you and I have argued about this before, when he rolled through on the off the coffin drop after Darby hit the coffin drop flush.
Yeah.
I think he ruined the finish, but that's, you know, I know nobody else agrees with that. And, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
But
I think he made it tomorrow, actually.
I mean, but the TNT title was made for him.
Yeah.
Because he can't challenge for the world title anymore, and he's going to obviously abide by that.
That was smart, by the way. That could be one of the smartest things they did, because that took him out of that Triple H, Jeff Jarrett thing, that conversation.
Yeah.
I mean, there's still sputters of people saying it. There are still sputters of people saying that he is in it for himself, and he makes himself look strong all the time.
Yeah, but he doesn't.
No.
I mean, here's the thing. A lot of people can say, and they would be right, that the match with Lance Archer at Double or Nothing was the worst match on the card. But it's no fault of Cody's.
Yeah, he tried his ass off.
It's the fact that Lance Archer is a big guy, works big man match, and Lance Archer really has, even going back to when he was, I mean, like they can say, oh, you know, he's great in Japan. Japan works his style.
Yeah.
When you have guys like Ishii and Michael Elgin, well, not necessarily Elgin anymore because he's kind of blackballed because he's a pervert, but you know, guys that work like that hard-hitting Japanese style, that's his style.
Yeah.
He can't work an American style. So that's no fault of Cody's. Cody has been in some shit fests, but it's no fault of his own. But also, I agree with the fact that, you know, a lot of people will say, oh, you know, he booked himself to go over and all that, but he doesn't because he's seen it done too many times. Cody has basically been in this business or been exposed to this business since the day he was born.
Yeah, he's seen so much.
All right.
Yep.
And his father, even when his father was world champion, you know how long Dusty would usually hold the belt for? 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So Dusty was a transitional champion.
Yeah, but that was fine. That was a heel territory too. You can't take that away from Dusty.
No, I'm not taking that away from Dusty. I'm just saying Dusty was smart about that. He's smarter than a promoter like Vern Gagne, every time Vern was champion, it was for 3 years.
Well, he's smart because he knew the territory.
Yeah.
When you watch WWE, you expect Hogan to be the champion back then.
Right.
You expect the Titans to overcome the big monsters. But if you're watching the NWA and you're going down south, you're trying to see Dusty chase Flair for the title. But you know Flair's going to win. That Dashley Bastion's going to come out with it.
Right.
That's the point.
Yeah. And the thing with Cody is Cody, again, he knows how to – when you're the son of a promoter – and that promoter actually knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
It's easy for you to be like, you know, I've been around wrestling promoters all my life. You know, I was obviously around Dusty. I know of J.J. Dillon because J.J. Dillon was kind of like, you know, not necessarily a booker, but a booker's assistant. As a matter of fact, he assisted Dusty.
Yeah.
I've seen enough tapes to the Grams. I've seen, you know, what other guys can do. Bill Watts, obviously. I've watched enough of this stuff to where, and I've seen what my father can do to where I know what not to do and I know what to do.
Yeah. They've treaded on that fine line too, because they have done a couple things that WCW did that were mistakes too, but they've done some good things too. Steve, I'm going to throw it to you. I don't know. I know you're an old school. You're more of an old school fan. I'm not sure how tuned in you are with the AEW product, but from what you've seen, do you think Cody has a good business mind about him?
Actually, you know what? I think he does have a great business mind.
So you think he's doing good at promoting?
Yeah, I think he's doing good. I think he has a great business mind like his dad did.
Yeah, I mean, I 100% agree. Eric, what would you think? Do you think that he's made more mistakes than successes, or do you think that it's been mostly like good from him, you know, with the creative ideas for AEW and, you know, helping build the brand forward and pretty much being the face of that company? What do you think his success has been?
I think it's been very, I wouldn't say very successful, but I would say better than I think people expected from the beginning. I think he's lived up to expectations. And he has made mistakes, as Doug alluded to earlier. But for the most part, his booking has been solid, especially around him. He hasn't put himself over so much to where he's the world champion. So he's been a good booker to this point.
Yeah, I mean, I would have to agree. And Doug, we'll bring you in to talk about, would you say Dustin Rhodes is the most underrated of the family?
Yeah, and he's been doing it for so long. You got to remember, Dustin started wrestling. Well, Dustin was first brought in when he was 18 years old, in 1988, right? And it's just, even when he was just the natural of, you know, the natural Dustin Rhodes in WCW, and everybody knew who he was because he could not get away with, he could not go out there without people saying, oh yeah, you know, that's Dusty's son. And especially around the time when he debuted in WCW and, you know, Dusty got the job back as Booker. So now everybody's thinking, oh, fuck, you know, this kid's going to be world champion soon, right? He took his share of losses. He was in his share of shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But also, he took his lumps like a champ. And when he became Gold Dust and the controversy that's because you got to remember how Dustin was fired from WCW. The King of the Road match from Uncensored 95.
Oh, that was a stink fest. That's still one of the worst gimmick matches of all time.
Yeah.
I didn't
Dustin
like that
Rhodes,
one.
Dustin Rhodes, Blacktop Bully, fighting in the back of an 18-wheeler. And the object was, and by the way, the fucking thing was moving. Because they actually fought, like, it was actually, like, on... They actually did it, like, they actually filmed it, like, on the rope.
Yeah.
Okay? And the object was to go to the back of the truck and honk the horn. That's how you win. And there was a strict no blading unless you're Flair or Hogan policy. Back in WCW, because they were trying to limit how much blood you did. Dustin and Blacktop Bully both bladed, therefore they got fired, as well as the producer, or the guy that was producing the match, Mike Graham. They all got fired, so it was stupid to, and Dusty, because Dusty did not really have that much stroke anymore. I mean, he was still part of that, you know, booking committee, but Bischoff really... The man Bischoff had as his head booker was Flair.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, back at the beginning of 94, he fired he removed Dusty from the committee so he could put Flair on.
Yeah.
Because Flair kind of, you know, politicked.
Yeah.
Okay. Dusty had no control over his son getting fired. But here comes the Goldust character. And, you know, Dustin's off to the races. And Goldust was the start of the Attitude Era.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And all the controversial stuff he did. The one thing I did not agree with, though, even though, you know, he had been Goldust for like 13, 14 months, I think they turned him babyface at the wrong – and they humanized him at the wrong time.
Well, yeah, because it worked for Mick, right? Because the Foley thing was before that, right? Or was the Dustin thing first?
Dustin was first.
Okay. Then my mistake. But the Mick thing worked beyond that.
Well, because they were able to – they had so many different dimensions of Mick Foley. They had three characters they could do.
But he was also easier to humanize.
Right. When you tell that story of, oh, you know, I always wanted to be a wrestler. I always dream, you know, I jumped off the roof of my parents' house or whatever.
Yeah.
Tell that story, you know, I've always dreamed of being a superstar, you know, I idolized Superfly Jimmy Snuka, all that stuff. And that's fine. But you know, so people got behind that. Dustin just tells the story, oh yeah, you know, I'm Dusty Rhodes' son and my dad wasn't home all the time. I mean, some people could relate to that, but other people are just like, my father was never home. He was boinking his secretary in a hotel room somewhere or something like that. You know, so who gives a fuck? Just because your father was a famous wrestler, you had it hard? Fuck you.
Yeah. And other attempts to humanize him have worked, I think. But Steve, do you think that Goldust should have been world champion during that big run, 96-97?
Yeah. Well, his character was, like, big around then. I think he could have been a world champion.
I agree.
Do you think if there was any era of him being a world champion, do you think it was then? That was the time they should have pulled the trigger?
Yeah, I would assume. I would say so.
What do you think, Doug?
I think they could have. I mean, he was getting high profile, like he was getting high profile matches. If you think about it, he worked three In Your House pay-per-views that year. Well, technically four, because one of them had to be redone because of the blackout in North Carolina.
Yeah,
but he worked.
Yeah, I remember that.
He worked four In Your Houses with Undertaker. Because Goldust was also intricate into the story with Mankind. Because, you know, they kind of like bond unofficially, like team them together.
Yeah.
I mean, they never worked a tag match, but they were both there to, you know, antagonize the Undertaker.
Wasn't that around the time Mick was calling him Mom or Mommy or something like that?
Was he calling Goldust Mommy? Or I think he called Sable Mommy at some point, too. Because I just remember. Like a Superstars match the weekend before SummerSlam, Mark Mero's out there having a match and Mankind just comes out and just starts calling Sable Mommy. And it was the creepiest freaking thing I had ever seen. And it's just like, but nothing really came of it. Mero never had to really work any matches with Mankind.
Yeah, that wasn't a program, really.
No, it wasn't. I mean, and Mankind, he came out towards the end of the match between Mero and Goldust at SummerSlam, which Goldust ended up winning, but it wasn't because of Mankind interfering. It was because Marlena stood up on the apron for 5 minutes. Distracting the referee, and it's like, and Sable didn't do anything. Sable was just sitting there because she's got one of those evening gowns or whatever. I mean, it was just the match between Mero and Goldust, as good as it was. It was just kind of hindered by the fact that
all the fucky shit.
Yeah, it was hindered basically by the fact that they were both married. Yeah.
Right.
And, I mean, at least Goldust's wife was intricate to his character and useful to his character because she was his director.
Yeah, I'd say Marlena actually played a bigger part than people give her credit for.
Yeah, I mean, she was intricate to the character, like I said. Sable was just there just because there were guys on the creative team that liked jacking off to her.
Jesus Christ.
I'm not wrong, though.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I think a lot of teenage boys at home would agree with him. But Stevie, I'm going to bounce back to you here. Because now that Doug started getting into managers, all three of these guys had a famous manager. We talked a lot about Sapphire last week. Dusty had Sapphire. Dustin had Marlena. And, of course, Cody has his wife, Brandy.
Who's not technically Arn, too.
Or, I mean, yeah, but I'm not putting Arn in this category.
Him and Sapphire weigh the same.
So, out of those three women... Who do you think is the best manager?
Marlena. Out of the three, I would pick Marlena. Yeah.
I would actually agree with that.
Here's the thing. There's no slight on Brandy, because Brandy actually is like the atypical businesswoman.
Yeah.
Okay? I don't necessarily agree with the fact that AEW has high heel shoes now. Those AEW heels.
Oh, the merch?
Yeah.
Yeah.
AEW heels. They're high heel shoes.
Well, the Marlena.
I don't necessarily agree with that, but she's coming up with a lot of that shit.
Wait, what were you saying, Steve? Yeah.
Well, the Marlena character worked with the Goldust character, so, you know.
Yeah. No, I 100% agree. I agree with what he's saying. I'm just saying is that, like, Brandy is a better businesswoman of the three.
Well, yeah, but she's like more in the backstage. I'm saying as like a manager. And I think as a heel, her and Cody are great together.
Right, when they have to do the heel work. She's not a good babyface.
No, she tries, but she's not. She's better at getting people to hate her. But when you saw Goldust, you would just expect to see Marlena next to him, you know? And I think the shit got stupid when they did the angle with Val Venus. Get into that a little bit, Doug.
Okay, so let's kind of backtrack a little bit before that.
Okay.
Back in the September of 97, Goldust loses a match to Brian Pillman. And Brian Pillman gets Marlena, Terry. Which is her real name, by the way, for 30 days. Now, there was supposed to be a payoff to where Goldust and Pillman was supposed to wrestle Dude Love at the Bad Blood pay-per-view.
Yeah.
And if he beat Pillman, Pillman would then have to face Goldust. And it was supposed to get Marlena back, so that was supposed to be the payoff. But there was no payoff because Pillman died. Okay.
Right.
So they let it go for about, I want to say, a month. Like, you know, Marlena went back to Goldust, and they did this sit down interview like 6 days before Survivor Series. And during the interview, Goldust said, "I found somebody else. You and Pillman were fucking. During that 30 days, I don't trust you anymore. I don't love you anymore. Here's your wedding ring. I'm out." Okay? And then she was technically written off TV.
Yeah.
And he got paired with Vashon and all that. They were actually having marital problems.
Yeah, well, he was also heavy in the booze at this point, right?
Yeah, he was heavy in the booze and painkillers and all that. He was screwed up. And then in June of 98, you know, he had already abandoned the Goldust character. He actually burned the outfit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he So he started kind of becoming, you know, we started quoting the Bible and all that shit, right?
Yeah. Did you like that, or would you say this is probably the worst part of the run?
It's the worst part of the run because at the time you're in the Attitude Era. Nobody's going to give a shit about you quoting the Bible.
Yeah.
I mean, the only thing that these alcohol-induced fans wanted you to do from the Bible was stone a whore.
Okay.
Unfortunately, again, I'm not lying. But like, so he becomes, you know, the quoting the Bible and all that, and Val Venus, obviously, when you think Bible, you don't think Val Venus. Okay.
No way.
And so he attacked Val Venus or whatever, right? So then they started the storyline where Val was porking, you know, Terry, Marlena. And it was so stupid because technically, yes, they were still married. They were in the middle of a separation and divorce, but they were still married.
Yeah.
So WWE does what they always do and make real life an angle.
Right. And that was the thing. Is that like, and plus, I mean, you really weren't going to get any more mileage out of Marlena and Goldust as a thing. All right.
You don't think so?
No, because I think they went as far as they could. That's why I was saying earlier, when they turned them babyface, it may have been too soon. If they would have kept him heel for another 6 months, they could have got more out of it.
Yeah.
But it was the attempt to humanize him.
Well, I think if you were going to give him the world title, it had to be as a heel too.
Right. And he could work. But the issue with that is you had to convince your summed up world champion to do the job for him.
I'm sure Brett wouldn't mind. I'm just
That's
kidding.
Not who I'm talking about. Brett probably, and actually, you know what? Brett probably wouldn't have even jobbed for him.
I thought he liked him.
He did, but that Brett took himself too seriously.
Yeah.
And Brett probably would have thought, knowing Brett's mind as a, you know, wrestler, he probably would have thought, I can't lose to a guy that's a
agronomist or whatever.
That's, you know, likes to, you know, give men the pat down and all that.
Well, while you're talking to that, get into this Razor Ramon thing. What was Scott Hall's beef with Goldust?
Scott Hall's a homophobe. I mean, basically, I mean, that's the way to put it almost. All right. Scott Hall, or like a lot of people probably were back at that time, Scott Hall's homophobic.
Yeah.
Okay, and it was Goldust was way into the character, and it freaked people out.
Yeah.
And plus, also at that time too, Scott Hall was also, you know, way into the pain pill. That's why he got suspended. Well, that and he had given his notice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, at around that time, you know, he has done outlandish stuff as Goldust.
Yeah.
You know, coming out dressed as women, obviously, with the gag ball in. He had an idea, Eric, to Vince McMahon. He pitched him. He walked into the board meeting. He wanted to get fake tits. Do you think that would have gotten over, Eric?
And this was back in the 90s?
Yeah. Do you think they were going a little too far, or he was, to try to
at
get
the
excited?
In the 90s, I think it might have gone over, because in the 90s, it was a different time. There was no internet, no social media, and people were more, how do I say it, laid back. So I don't think they were too cautious of that kind of thing. That makes sense.
Well, they did. Here's the thing. It would not have been too far, because they did the same thing on the Drew Carey show. One of the characters, I mean, it technically didn't happen.
Yeah, but Goldust wanted real tits. Or, well, real fake tits.
Oh, wow.
He was into the character. Do you think he was going a little far?
Yeah, a little bit. If it happened now,
I
yeah,
mean, the fact
it would
you
be.
You have to live with that shit.
Too
yeah.
far.
I mean, yes, you can get them like either reduced or.
Well, you know that probably would have killed the character if you look at it.
You think so?
Like, I think that would. Yeah, that would have been well. That would have hurt the character. I mean, that's like, you know, going maybe a little too far, but I don't know, that's my opinion.
I agree with Stevie. Yeah. I think that's a little much.
I kind of do agree with that, too, because the last thing anybody would really want to do that's in the ring with him was accidentally motorboat Goldust. I mean, can you fucking imagine Vader in there? Like, Vader has it in the corner, and then all of Vader's face is just...
What the fuck?
But that was the most unorthodox example I could come up with.
Or Undertaker. But wrap it up, Goldust, so we can go on one of the other two for a little bit. Do you believe? Because he dawned in even before the Attitude Era, like right before. Do you think at one point Goldust was the hottest thing in wrestling, or at least the most talked about thing in wrestling?
Yeah. Because a lot of people couldn't believe that they were going to go that far.
Yeah.
And here's the thing, like if you look at like the string of guys that he beat, you know, because he was undefeated for a while.
Yeah.
Or for a couple of months. He debuted, he beat Marty Jannetty, who is technically just coming back himself.
Yeah.
Okay? He beat Savio Vega, who made it to the finals of the King of the Ring that year.
True.
And was also a click boy. So, or he was friends with Scott Hall.
Yeah.
So, you know, obviously they were going somewhere there. And then they had him beat, you know, Bam Bam Bigelow in the same way that Bigelow beat the Big Boss Man at the 1993 Royal Rumble, which was couldn't really get out of the blocks. Oh, that match wasn't that long. And Bigelow was gone shortly thereafter.
Yeah.
And Goldust is beating these guys that were top mid-card guys. And just like the push he was getting. And like I said, too, I mean, the fact that in 1996 he had three pay-per-view, or again, technically four pay-per-view matches with The Undertaker.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, definitely influential. Going back to Dusty, do you think, because we talked about his WWE run a little more last week. Do you think, Stevie, this one's for you, do you think Dusty's WWE run was a success or a failure compared to his run in the NWA?
Well, I think it wasn't that great in the WWE, but I think the NWA made him who he was because he had more success in the National Wrestling Alliance. That's supposed that he ever did in the WWE.
Right.
That's about my opinion on it.
And you would be right, but also, too, like, if you look at the whole thing with the polka dots and all that, and again, I talk a lot about, even though I have no wisdom on the subject whatsoever, but I always talk about marketability, right?
Yeah.
Look, like with the polka dots and all that, if you look, and Stevie, you kind of know a little bit, quite a bit about this stuff too, because, you know, you grew up in that era about, you know, the Hasbro toy line.
Yeah.
And the thing is, because I know that you have Hasbros yourself.
Yeah.
Did you ever have the Dusty one?
Yes, I did.
All right. Do you still have it, or did you get rid of a lot of yours?
Still have them. They're in my closet.
All right.
I have the WWE version, but
okay. Now, did you ever? You collect them loose, right? You don't collect them on the card.
No, I collect them, like, you know, not on the card, but I collect
okay.
them.
All right, but so like my point is that like if you go trying to look for a Dusty figure, especially like on the card, because it was so rare at that point, because when they finally developed the figure for him, he was already gone.
Yeah, he
you're
was,
looking
he was
at
gone by 91, right?
And the series came out in like the spring of 91. But like the thing is that if you go looking for, you know, his figure today, it's going to cost you like, you know, over $1,000.
Damn. Don't you have
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know why you guys keep telling me I used to have a Dusty, because I don't.
You did.
I did not.
You had a Dusty. You had a loose Dusty.
Well, I had a Shawn Michaels figure. I mean,
I know you had quite a few of them, because you and I were both kind of starting to get back into collecting them loose. I got back into collecting them mint on card a couple of years ago.
But, yeah, getting back into Dusty. So what do you think of his WWF run, Doug?
Okay. His WWF run, like, the thing about his WWF run is that it was cool. Cool theme music.
Yeah.
Had a good look to him. You know, with the polka dots and all that, because it was a cool look.
Could he have been world champion?
No.
If Hogan wasn't around?
If Hogan run, here's the thing. Here's the peck. You got to remember the pecking order back then. As far as baby faces go, Hogan, Warrior. I personally think Jake the Snake was a third. Was third in line. Then you got to think Brutus. Even though everybody, you know, nobody really liked Brutus.
Yeah, fuck. Brutus is not over Dusty.
No.
Because he was Hogan's, yeah.
No.
All right. Brutus, and then Dusty was kind of there with, even though Dusty cut a better promo than Brutus, Brutus's ring work was.
No. Nope. Not doing that.
So I think Dusty was like fifth or sixth in line, because he was kind of like on the same level as Duggan. Even though him and Duggan should have been higher, because they were.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They were more over.
They were more over than Beefcake, but they were.
They weren't friends with Hogan.
Right.
So we talked about both Dusty and Dustin's early days. Eric, did you see anything in Cody when he first bursted onto the scene and he started teaming with Hardcore Holly? Did you think he'd be a star?
Maybe not so much Hardcore. I saw potential when he was teaming in Legacy with Randy Orton and Ted DiBiase Jr. I thought he had the it factor, especially because they put him with Randy Orton. He was another up and comer and part of another historic family, the Orton family. And DiBiase.
Yeah. And the thing about that, the legacy thing is, at the time, I saw nothing in Cody, to be honest. I thought that DiBiase would be a star.
Well, and that's what everybody else thought. Everybody was kind of building DiBiase to be like the top babyface, right?
Yeah.
But again, like, as you know, as a lot of times the fans dictate what you do.
Yeah.
Even though Vince doesn't give a fuck about what the fans think, especially now because he's 75 years old and could care less.
True.
But like back then, when DiBiase was supposed to get this major push, he had the movie and all that. The fans started cheering for Orton. Okay. And because they started cheering for Orton, Orton got the big babyface push. DiBiase kind of stayed in that mid-card, and Cody gets rebranded as Dashing Cody Rhodes, which actually worked for him because he had a wonderful smile.
Well, I think that's the thing, is they give Cody the Dashing thing. They give, after that WrestleMania, by the way, they give DiBiase the million-dollar belt and say, go ahead, be a new version of your father. Here's Maurice.
Right.
And, I mean, and Cody obviously had more success, I'd say. So I think Cody ran with what he was given a little more, and WWE took note of that.
Yeah.
And it was Ted that was the one that retired early, right? When did he retire?
Yeah. It was personal reasons.
Yeah.
He wanted to raise his family.
Yeah, well, because I think it was, he didn't really see anything, them doing anything with him.
Yeah. Well, they weren't. They had that what? When they tried to make a baby face. They had him doing
The DiBiase posse.
Yeah. And they had him doing, what is it called? In the parking lot, like when you do it at a sporting event?
Oh, the tailgate parties?
Yeah, they used to have them tailgate and shit, right?
Yeah.
And that didn't even stick.
No. And then, you know, he figured, you know, because his father had the Father of David Ministries. So he's like, you know what? I'm just going to go into ministry with my dad.
Yeah.
And it worked. He became a youth counselor.
Yeah. But there were so many other budding stars around there, too.
Right.
Cody back then, I think when the Dashing Kid, with the whole thing with Mysterio, and he started wearing that clear mask to hide his face, which still makes no fucking sense, but...
Yeah, you wear a clear mask to hide the fact that you're no longer Dashing, and people can still see your fucking face.
And you look the same.
The thing is that... Like with Dusty, because everybody, you know, respected Dusty so much. Dusty, because he loved his son, had no problem, you know, coming out and being a heel. Like, you know, when he, you know, turned on Cena or whatever, you know, when he was the guest host and he turned on Cena and, you know, then they beat up DX because he hit him with the cowboy boot and all that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, DX was feuding with his son, and then Orton RKO'd him, like, right after, because Orton's just like, why the fuck should I be aligned with you? You're a legend. I'm the legend killer. Your fat ass is going down.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he turned on Rey or on Rey Mysterio, so, and helped Cody beat him up and all that. But that's just because his son is a heel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you mentioned it earlier. If there were... Legacy, I think, didn't hit because it was too far, or it was too soon after Evolution, so it didn't make sense. But out of all the things that
I like
happened,
the idea.
The idea is great. Out of all the things that happened, Legacy's matches with DX were fucking phenomenal. They had great matches with Triple H and Shawn Michaels.
Right, and I think it had more to do though. It had more to do with Shawn than anything, because Hunter is again one of those guys that if you're not a friend of his, you're not going to benefit from working with him.
You say that. I mean, we do say that, and there's a lot of proof, but not here. Him and Sean both made those guys look good.
I think more Sean than anybody.
No, I'd say it was pretty give or take. I've seen the matches recently. Especially their one at the Hell in a Cell. That was crazy. That was the best thing about that pay-per-view.
Right, because they did the right thing to where... You know, they locked Hunter out of the cell and all that. And
yeah.
Sean took the beating. But you knew Sean was going to take the beating, do the majority of the selling just because, you know, Sean, especially, you know, after the whole back injury and all that.
Yeah.
You know, Sean became a different person. Sean had no problem helping people.
Well, I think they both did a good job of making these two young bucks look legitimate.
Yeah. See, my issue...
Absolutely.
I know you got to bury Hunter on every episode, but...
Well, the problem... The my issue with Hunter is back in those days, I mean, like after like 2010 and all that, or like even still now because of his how bad the match was, the matches at WrestleMania were with Rollins and Reigns.
Yeah.
Hunter, unfortunately, at that point was one of those kinds of guys that like, in his mind, helping you was helping you tie the anchor to your foot before he threw you in the river.
Yeah.
Okay. So he could help you drown faster.
I see what you're saying. I just don't think he did it here. So I don't know if that's very valid.
He may not have done any. Again, I'm giving more credit to Sean than anything.
I know, yeah.
Because I would never give. I give Hunter credit now as a businessman helping develop the young talent.
Yeah.
As a performer that was supposed to help get the young talent over, I give him no credit.
Right.
I agree with that.
Eric, what are your thoughts on the Stardust character?
I thought they were just trying to do another Goldust, obviously. I mean, it worked for a little while, but then it was just, at the end, it was just not getting over. And I think that's ultimately why Cody decided to leave, because he wanted to change his character and they weren't budging, so he said, fuck it, I'm leaving. And it was for the better, I guess, as we have AEW now. So.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the reason we have AEW, so I guess it is for the best. I do like his work with Neville, though, when they were trying to, like, do like a real life comic book or like superheroes, and then brought the guy from Arrow in.
Yeah,
I thought that stuff was interesting, and it could have, if it more expanded on it, could have been really good.
I'm sorry.
What was that, Eric? No, you go ahead.
I think if they had teamed with Goldust sooner rather than when they did, and maybe had Dusty as their manager, it could have gone over. They could have been great tag team champions. But they didn't do it. And fans wanted that. Fans wanted that for a long time, I remember.
And this part is what I was excited to talk about. Because the best thing Cody Rhodes ever did in WWE, we were there, Doug.
Yeah.
And the Battleground pay-per-view. This is the most surreal moment in my life as a wrestling fan, being there live. This is one of the greatest things I've ever seen. Was they were fighting for their contracts, right? They were going to get fired.
Now, hold on. Stevie, weren't you there too?
No, I wasn't.
Okay,
so it was Battleground, 2013?
Yeah, it was the last night I lived in Buffalo.
Yes. So
you got
the Shield, Rollins and Reigns, versus Cody and Goldust.
Right.
With Dusty in their corner.
Correct.
And this wasn't for the titles. They beat them a couple weeks later for the titles, right?
Yeah.
But this was to keep their jobs. They won pop in that building. Buffalo went fucking nuts. You and me were there. We went nuts. And hearing Dusty's theme after.
Yeah.
It was one of the greatest moments I've ever seen live. And all three of those, and that's one thing I really wanted to touch on, because this is a Rhodes family retrospective. That's the three members right there, and they all made us feel something. They all put that tingle in our hearts. You know, they were the perfect baby faces that night.
Yeah.
There was no that was the best thing, because that show sucked. That was the best thing on that card.
Oh, yeah. When, like, you look at it, when you look at what was on that card, and it's just like, okay, because to be honest with you, the only reason why we went there is because I knew they were coming into town. I knew I was going to be leaving to come move out here. And it was because I wanted to get you and Mindy tickets today, because you got fucked over going to a Raw show.
Yeah.
Because some piece of shit decided to take the ticket money and go to the strip club. If you're listening to this, you know who you are, and fuck you anyway. The guy would actually be listening to this.
He might make me a Crunchwrap Supreme if I ask him.
I don't think he's actually still working in fast food. Early, if he is, he should be wearing a hazmat suit.
No, he does. He's still there.
Anyway. So anyway, getting back on topic.
I was his boss too, by the way, eventually. Mike Pesch, when he came back to Taco Bell, I was his boss.
You should have lit him on fire for what he did to you. So anyway, but like that card was, it was so, it was such a bad card. I mean, when you had Curtis Axel versus R-Truth for the Intercontinental title, AJ Lee versus Brie Bella.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing their husbands go at it in a match.
Yeah.
But the wives, AJ could carry her own.
Brie is one of the worst women workers of all time.
Brie's lucky she can carry her children.
Yeah, because she cannot carry a match.
Exactly. But yeah, no, that moment, because, and again, they didn't use, like, they used Dusty's music. Okay?
Yeah.
And hearing that song, it brought back a lot of nostalgia for people. And seeing Dusty, you know, beat the shit out of Ambrose with the with his leather belt. And, you know, they fought for their jobs and they won, which obviously you knew there had to be a feel-good moment to the story.
Yeah.
Except for the fact that Dusty was supposed to retain his job retain his job as NXT's general manager, but yet they still kept a job at, God damn it, they still kept a job on JBL.
What did they
do? Because NXT didn't follow WWE storyline, because they realized WWE TV sucked.
Yeah.
Any other moments you want to touch on, Eric? I know you're a big Cody fan too. But I don't think we're going to go too long tonight. So you want to get into some moments?
I mean, obviously, his in Japan days. I mean, in ROH days. When he introduced the character, the American Nightmare, I thought that was pretty cool. Going off by his dad with the American Dream.
Yeah.
And then his stuff in New Japan was phenomenal, and here we are today. Almost a year and a half later, AEW is going strong, still running. People said they weren't going to last. And here they are still lasting, even without fans.
Despite the fact that Chris Cruz stooged on him to the Maryland State Athletic Commission.
Yeah. That still bugs me today.
Well, here's the thing. I've gotten into the story many times about Chris Cruz's vendetta against the Rhodes family. And I have no problem talking shit about him because I've actually tried to, he keeps popping up on my Facebook, like friends you may know or people you may know bullshit. I've requested him like 5 times because I've wanted to get him on the show to explain why he's such a prick towards the Rhodes family. And he's denied me every time. So,
wow.
Well, fuck Chris Cruz.
Yeah. Fuck Chris Cruz. Obviously Scott Hudson was better. That's why they replaced you with him. Scott Hudson, of course, friend to the show.
I knew you.
Yeah. Anyway. But, like, so.
Nice plug.
That was
thanks.
Nice plug.
But, like, the thing with the three of them, yeah, nobody thought AEW, I mean, I wasn't even sure if AEW was going to last or not. But they have financial backing.
Yep.
The only issue I had with their financial backer is the financial backer they have, his family owns a football team that just 5-6 years ago was trying to bribe fans into the stands with free beer.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
how much fucking
coach.
Money could they have if they're offering if they're not even charging you a ticket for a ticket? They're just saying, please come here and we'll get you drunk.
Well, that's not the only organization they own, though. They own a very popular soccer team in Brazil, right, Eric? I think it's Brazil.
I was going to say Eric.
I believe so.
Yeah, so they own that. I believe they own a vehicle company too, or a manufacturer or something.
Don't they
like
own
that.
An oil company too?
Yeah. So the cons have a lot more hands and pots than you realize. They are the dad's a billionaire.
Right.
His net worth is over Vince McMahon's.
And the thing is that they're not just throwing away money. Like, you know, WCW did.
Not on big names. No, they're signing young off.
They're signing independent darlings that they know people can get behind.
Yeah.
Although the only way I'm going to get behind Eddie Kingston is if I'm going to push him in front of a bus.
I knew you were going to be pissed about them signing him.
Oh, he's fucking useless.
The Cody match was good, though.
I didn't see it, so I can't really judge. What I am looking forward to is tomorrow night, when they're on Dynamite, even though we're probably not going to be watching it because we have like 50 other fucking things going on.
It's 6 o'clock.
Huh?
Isn't it at 6 o'clock? AEW's at 6.
Yeah, but you know I got to have time to get my rocks off before we do the show.
Oh my God.
I used a clean turn.
My God. All right,
so... Before we...
I was trying to plug the match, but that went to hell.
It was a good match. So before we hit home, we're going to talk about what I think is the greatest match in the last 5 years. Cody and Dustin from Double or Nothing had some kind of special energy to it. That was a great match. Steve, did you see that?
Yes, I did.
Your thoughts?
I thought it was a great match. It had a lot of energy to it, that's for sure.
I mean, you could practically see Dusty there.
Dusty would have been proud.
Oh, he was looking down with a smile.
He would have been in that corner if he was still alive.
Those two guys going at it. Dustin bleeding like Eddie Guerrero in that JBL match.
Right.
And... those two, just the passion in that match, the psychology to it, that really felt like Dusty was looking down, smiling at him.
Right.
Right.
Yep.
I mean, it was a good match. It was obviously the best match of that show.
Of that year.
Yeah. Well, I think, they topped themselves a couple of times.
Yeah. Well, it was better than their tag match with the Young Bucks.
Oh, yeah. Well, first of all,
if
Dustin and Cody are going to team, they got to go against the team that, one, isn't overrated.
They got to go against the Usos. They had great chemistry with the Usos.
They had wonderful chemistry with the Usos. And the Usos had no problem putting people over.
Yeah.
Well,
they did that mutton chops.
I love the Usos.
And they're not pieces of shit like Matt Jackson. But that's the only thing. That's the only knock I have on AEW is that Fight for the Fallen match. The match went like half hour, 45 minutes. I had to go to work the next morning.
Yeah, I mean, Eric was over. That was a chore to sit through.
Yeah. It was a fucking chore to sit through, and it's just like, I mean, it would have been okay had, Dustin and Cody went over, because it was like, okay, well, obviously the Bucks aren't as good as everybody thinks they are, but it's like, oh no, the Young Bucks are going over. Who gives a fuck? I'll sit through a 45-minute Young Buck match if, A, they lose, and B, Matt breaks his neck. I hate that fucking guy.
Couldn't tell.
Yeah, we didn't know, guys.
Yeah, so But I mean, yeah, that was just that's the only knock I have on that. I mean, I will give Cody credit because Cody's the one that took the fall.
Yeah.
But also, since Cody is a high-ranking official, he could have been like, motherfucker, if I have to spend 45 minutes in the ring with your overrated asses, I better fucking go over.
All right. So we might do a part two at some point. But we got into the three a good amount. Eric, what are your final closing thoughts on the Rhodes family? This was your poll idea.
I do have a small story. When I was in Disney World, I did see Cody. I was going to like the bathroom or something, and I saw Cody Rhodes. I swear I saw him.
Oh, that's sweet.
I don't know if I really did see him or I was just imagining him. That was a long time ago, when he was still in WWE.
You saw Cody Rhodes in the bathroom at Disney World.
Did you help him wipe?
Outside the bathroom. This was like in 2008.
All right, closing thoughts.
Rhodes family is one of the more most legendary families in wrestling. Had a huge impact on wrestling today. If it wasn't for Dusty, I don't know. Dusty was very influential in wrestling business. Obviously, the brothers too. So.
Stevie, your closing thoughts on the Rhodes family?
Well, I think they had a good heck of a career in professional wrestling. So, I would have to say that.
Absolutely. My final thoughts, and then I'll give it to you, Doug. Dusty is the greatest babyface in professional wrestling. Dustin is one of the greatest characters in professional wrestling. And Cody Rhodes is becoming one of the greatest businessmen / bookers / backstage figures in professional wrestling. All three of these people knew what they were doing. All three of these guys are some of the smartest minds in the business. And I would have to agree with your point, Eric. This is one of the greatest families in professional wrestling.
Yep.
Go ahead, Doug.
Except with the Hart family and the Dynamics.
This is one of the – there's very few families in the wrestling business that don't have, like, some kind of tragedy around them.
Yeah.
Like – the Von Erich family, all the tragedy that surrounds them.
The Flairs, even.
The Flairs, you know, and the tragedy that surrounds Reed. And the tragedy that Rick actually still gets TV time.
The tragedy that was David's.
Yeah, what's up with that?
Yeah.
Why is Rick still getting TV time?
It was to help get Randy Orton over. I mean, I get why they did it, but...
I thought it was a cool angle, but...
Well, and again, this is about the – I mean, we could talk about that another day. But, like, you know, the Flairs, Von Erichs, even, like, the kind of tragedy that surrounds the Harts with Owen's death, and even back in the 90s when Brother Dean died the day before Thanksgiving in 1990, the Guerreros and, you know, how Eddie passed and all that.
Yeah.
But, like, they're really – I mean, because let's face it, Dusty, yes, Dusty was technically still the creative mind towards, or still kind of working in NXT.
Yeah.
Right. When he passed away. But he was going to be 70 years old.
Yeah. He was getting old.
He was getting up there. So there's really not like he didn't die from, he didn't die from like a drug overdose or a gunshot or, you know, whatever. Something tragic. It was tragic. He died because, unfortunately, when you fall when you're that age, there's complications.
Yeah.
All right. Because your body can't handle that stuff.
Yeah.
So there's not really a lot of tragedy when it surrounds the Rhodes family. It's more they triumph more than they have tragedy. And I mean, even everything that, you know, Dustin had to go through in his life, and all the, you know, when Goldust was watered down.
Yeah.
And everything Cody had to put up with when he first came in. You know,
they've been through a lot.
Yeah.
A lot of tribulations.
Yeah. And, but their father went through a lot.
Yeah.
But their father also had the mind, and he passed his knowledge of the wrestling business to his sons, and Cody exhibits that every week when he's on TV. Now, tomorrow night is going to be, we're going to see how good of a businessman Cody is when he faces Brody Lee, because it's either, you know, the role that Brody Lee has been on with the Dark Order, Brody Lee should be walking out of Dynamite tomorrow night with the TNT title.
Well, maybe.
If they want to keep the Dark Order on the role they've been on.
Yeah.
But when you think about the Rhodes family, you got to think, you know, this is one of those instances where there's not a lot of tragedy behind the family. They're very hardworking, because again, they didn't come in from a lot of money. I mean, they have a lot of money now.
Yeah.
But Dusty, they weren't raised from money. They were raised as hardworking people. And
son of a plumber.
Yeah.
Grandsons of plumbers.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I mean, to be honest with you, now plumbers do make an awful lot of money.
Yeah, they do well.
Yeah. But they're definitely one of the more successful wrestling families.
I would 100% agree. They are all legends.
That's a great idea for a top 10 list.
Hell yeah, we'll definitely give that a gander. All right, guys, this was our Rhodes family career retrospective. Like I said earlier,
yep.
Next week we will be doing Shawn Michaels' top 10 memorable moments. Tomorrow we will get started with our Jeopardy match at 8. That's the first one, right?
Yeah, it's going to be a couple of buddies of mine from work and a buddy of mine one of my Facebook buddies. At 9 o'clock, Eric's brother is going to be competing.
Yes.
Against a friend of Daniel's.
Yes.
And against a co-worker of mine and Eric's.
Yes.
Okay.
A thorn in Eric's side and a pain in my ass.
So that's going to happen. And then Sunday, we're going to be doing Jeopardy then. I'm not going through the whole list. Top tier podcast will be on as well. We'll give more info on Facebook and Twitter with the times. But that was our Rhodes family retrospective. Stevie, Eric, Doug, thank you guys. Had a great time, and we'll see you next
time. I'm glad I can make the drive to be out here with you.
Stevie, it was a pleasure as always. Doug and Daniel,
you too.
Pleasure.
All right.
Yep.
See ya.
Smile.